today. For those of you who haven't been with us, let me give you a short, catch you up to speed just a little bit on what we've been doing this year. Hopefully you got a chance to look over our mosaic over here, and there's a picture, you can't tell from out there, but as you get closer, you can see all the pictures from all the different people in our church. And this year we've kind of themed, "This is us." Not "this is who we used to be," not "this is who we're going to be," but "this is who we are." This is us. And this year we've spent a lot of time just reflecting on who we are as a church. And it seems to be an appropriate theme or topic for this morning. And so throughout the year, we've gone through and we've looked at the examples of faith that are in the scriptures to kind of inspire us to do great works in the name of the Lord. And as you can see, there are a lot. Now, this serves a couple different purposes. It has a list of all the people we've studied. It's also like a built-in calendar. So how many Sundays have been there this year? Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I think we're about 16. And we're going to stick Esther up there today. Esther is So who's sitting by Chris Lewis? Bill, make sure he doesn't fall asleep. He needs this sermon this morning. Esther is not your Sunday school teacher, but that's who inspired her. Thanks for sharing those thoughts. It's great. You never know where we're going to go each Sunday. Esther is one of the most peculiar stories in the Bible. I think Chris did a pretty good job of saying, hey, we don't talk about Esther very often. There are a lot of women named Esther in kind of honor of the great queen. And so I would imagine if you were named after her, you'd probably have a pretty good idea about the story. But the rest of us, maybe it's been a while since we've talked about Esther. And so I have an idea this morning that's either going to be the worst idea or the greatest idea. We will see. But I'm going to call the kids up here, if you guys would like to come around. And we're going to do something a little different. Esther, the book of Esther, is an inspiration for the Jewish festival of Purim. P-U-R-I-M. Purim. Go ahead, kids. Come up here. So every year, this year I believe it was in March, Jews get together and they celebrate this festival called Purim. And I'm going to have you guys sit like right on the stage. You can sit on the stage or just kind of in this area, and we're going to do a little something in just a second, okay? It's going to be awesome or terrible. We'll figure it out. You are all cute, so it won't be terrible, but Chris may not learn about Esther. We'll see what happens. All right, we'll see what happens. But every year at Purim, the Jews get together, and Purim is kind of like the Mardi Gras of the Jewish calendar. So if you do a little video search online, you'll find some great synagogue services. And one of the things they do is they all come and they'll have these special celebrations and they'll all wear costumes. Because the story of Esther is one that you can kind of depict. It's one of the most vivid stories in the Bible because the characters are so relatable and they're so vivid. And so I don't know if I have enough, but we're going to dress up for a minute. Would that be okay? I think I have enough for all of you, but we'll see. We have different costumes to wear. Because this is what we do in Purim. So I have the big hat here. All right, Colton, you can have that one right in the middle. All right. It gets worse, all right? Let's see. We have, Jordan, maybe this will be good for you. All right, so we have that one for you. Somebody wants a cape? I need a cape. You want the cape, Julia? Put that cape on. Oh, what else do I have? Jade, this seems like it would be fitting for you. The butterfly, Jade, very much. Can you see the other? All right. Kellen, what if we changed it? You want to be the monkey? All right, I'm going to tell you, this is like the most annoying mask ever. So if you want to, man, I want to keep this on. I had all kinds of masks to bring that were a little scary. So this is the exciting one that I got. All right, so you want to do it? You can wear that. Take it off. You know. To this one. It's Mother's Day. Maybe we should have a book. Christopher. Yes. There's no insinuation here, Jennifer. We'll just put that on Christopher for the morning. All right. You can pull that up so you can see. It's a little big. Gavin, you want to put this shirt on? Ben, this is like one of my sweetest Goodwill finds ever. It was like $2. You want to put that on? All right, so we're getting ready for the Purim celebration. Hey, guys, say Purim. Purim. It's kind of a hard festival to say. Kellen, you want to wear this one? This is kind of sweet. It's like a Taekwondo thing. It'll probably swallow you up, but it kind of looks like a straitjacket, Cameron Aubrey, so if you need to use it for anything else, you don't have to keep it on if you don't want, but I'll tie it up for you at this, babe. Oh, what else do we have? Clementine, you can put that one on. Violet, oh, I got something for you, Violet. I think it's right here. I hope this fits. This will be sweet. Yeah. All right, Violet. Yeah, she looks like a Mets now. I like it. Perfect. Jessica, you need something? Let's see. I think I might just have wigs left, so we're going to change everybody's hair. This is going to be brilliant. I don't even know what's in this bag. Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's cover up the red hair. What? This is kind of red. Looks like it's adorably, I think, at one time, so maybe. Your hair is slippery. Yes! Did everybody get something? Everybody got something? No, I don't. I think I'm going to wear this one as we read through. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Like, this is a Mother's Day you'll never forget. I'm just going to sit by Randy for a minute. This looks ridiculous. You all look... Yeah, that's right. I love that Cecilia's like in the middle of them as a monkey. Deadpanning. So what they do is they all dress up, and this is just like a Purim light. Like, we're just kind of doing a little bit. But in a Purim festival, everybody comes and they have like costume contests, which I would win, of course. This is sweet. They have costume, and they have a dramatic reading, kind of a melodramatic reading of the story of Esther. But it's a little bit of participation is required. So we're going to read through this story, and I'm going to help you along the way, okay? Chris, pay attention. You're going to learn the story of Esther. All right, you guys ready? As I read, I'm going to stop a couple places because I'm going to need your help. So far, so good. I thought they may be like staging a revolt or something, but this is good. Okay, no, you don't have to act, but there's just a couple things you'll see. So you know what we're talking about? Esther. Say Esther. Esther. Esther was a beautiful, beautiful woman. Let's learn about her, okay? Here's the story. Long ago, in a country called Persia, say Persia. It's also known as Babylon. You say Babylon. Say Persia. Say Babylon. Say Persia louder. Persia. There was a king named Achashverosh. You could say that. That's terrible. That was the Hebrew name. You could actually call him Xerxes. That's a little easier. So we're going to call him Xerxes, right? So Xerxes was the king of what? Persia, right? Persia. Xerxes was the king of Persia, also known as Babylon, okay? And there was a queen named Vashti. Vashti. That's kind of a pretty name, right? Well, listen to what happened. King Xerxes ordered his wife, the queen, to appear before him at a party so he could show how pretty she was. But she was a modern, confident, independent woman. Now, this is something like that. And so she would not allow herself to be objectified. Say objectified. It's not in the Bible, but we just added that a little bit for clarity. And so she refused to go. So the queen disobeyed the king and wouldn't appear. And so the king was angry. And so now we're going to give our angry faces. The king was furious and angry. Gavin, that is not an angry face. Let's see it. I don't think I've ever seen you angry. There it is. Kellen represented for us. Aubrey, we especially celebrate you today. Terrifying. To make matters worse, the king's advisors teased the king and said, you know what, king, if the word gets out, no one's wife is going to think that she has to listen to her husband. And so the advisors encouraged the king to banish her from his sight and never enter his presence again. Sad faces. Ever again. Cecilia, sad face. I can't see it. Just kidding. King Xerxes was not happy being alone without a queen for very long, and so he had a beauty contest that he held throughout the land to find the most beautiful, wonderful woman. She had hair like mine. It wasn't too long before the king's scouts happened to cross a beautiful woman named Esther. Now, when I say Esther, I want you to do this. Yeah, she's a beautiful woman. The masculine men over here are like, I'm not doing that. Ladies, if you could do that. Esther. I have a part for everyone else in a moment, okay? So they happened across Esther. And then the iPad got stuck on one side and was difficult to read. Now, this is in the Bible. Esther was a beautiful, gracious, and kind woman. She had, you know what they did? They found her, she was beautiful, and they gave her a year's worth of spa treatments, like the best Mother's Day present ever. A year of spa and beauty treatment so that she was even more beautiful. So, as you might imagine, do you think the king married Esther? She was the most beautiful woman in the land, and so the king was quick to secure Esther. Esther was a Jew. Hold your hands up. Both hands up. Esther was a Jew. That's right. She was Jewish, but the Jews had been driven out of Israel, their home, about 70 years before this. And they were exiled in, remember, where were they? In Persia, which is also known as Babylon. So it's the same place. And they did their best to make a living in this strange land, but they prayed that someday they would be able to go home. Esther's uncle was named Mordecai. Say Mordecai. So we have Xerxes. You get all these people, there's about six people we want to remember. Xerxes, we have Mordecai, who was Esther's uncle. Helen? Or who, Mordecai? We're going to find out. What did Mordecai do? He was the leader of the Jews, and he told Esther, Esther, don't let anybody know that you're a Jew. You've got to keep that secret. And so Esther did that. Now, there was another man, and this is where we really need help. During the Purim festival, whenever they say the name of the adversary, I'm not going to say it, we have to prep it. Everybody yells out so that you can't hear his name said because he's the bad guy. So his name, and I'm going to say it once, but whenever I say it, you guys have to scream really loud. Was a man named Haman. Yes. His name is Haman. Haman. Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. Haman, he's a bad guy. Haman. Yeah, we don't even want to hear his names. But so there was a man named Haman. There was a man named Haman. And he became very powerful in the kingdom. He was like the prime minister of Persia. And he decided that because he was so powerful, that everybody should bow down to him. That's a good idea. Everybody should bow down to him. But there was a guy who was Esther's uncle whose name was Mordecai, and Mordecai wasn't going to do it. He said, I'm not going to bow down. Haman, Julia's got it. Haman, blah! It made him really angry. And so he asked the king, hey, let's just get rid of all the Jews. They're not supposed to be here anyways, and so let's just get rid of them. And so Haman, you sound like goats now, casted lots to determine which day they were going to do this. And it was decreed that in Adar, in the coming year, on the 13th day of the month, that all the Jews were to be killed. In every province, in every part of the land, there was going to be nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And this is where our brave Esther. Her uncle Mordecai had found out that some people were trying to kill the king. And so he told Esther, who told the king, and Mordecai, if you knew that somebody, oh, don't, Mordecai's the good guy, devil man. Mordecai got a good reputation with the king because he had saved the king, and so the king knew about Mordecai. This will come in the story. It's an important story. he told her also that Haman was plotting to kill all of the Jews, and Mordecai asked Esther to go to the king on behalf of the Jews to try to save him. Esther, do you think she was afraid to go to the king? Nobody was allowed to go to the king unless the king asked you to come see him. And so she was frightened because nobody could do this, even the beloved king. And so do you know what she did? She fasted and she prayed for 3 days. I mean, a fast. No eating for 3 days. Praying for 3 days. And then she went to see the king. And she was afraid still. And the king was a little angry. But what was the king's name? Xerxes. Xerxes loved Esther so much that he said, you know what? Let me know what you want. You can have a half of the kingdom. And what she asked was that the king and Haman, the bad guy, Kolkot, join her for dinner that night. She had a plan. And so they came to dinner that night, and they started eating. And the king said, now what do you want? We're here. What would you like? And Esther said, this is what I would like. I would like to do this again tomorrow. Let's have another party tomorrow night. I want the king and I want Haman to come to the banquet, and then I will answer your question. Well, they both were excited. Who doesn't want to go to a party 2 nights in a row? And so they decided they would come back. Haman was really excited because, remember, he was a big deal. And he thought, I'm going to go hang out with the king 2 nights in a row. But as he was leaving, he came across Mordecai. And what were people supposed to do when the bad guy came along? Bow down. Did Mordecai bow down? No. He was infuriated. And so he decided that night he was going to build a gallows. You know what that is? A big thing to hang people on. It's scary, right? On the way, that way he would have it all done, and then he could enjoy dinner with the king and the queen. Well, that same night, the king couldn't sleep. Restless. Couldn't sleep. And so he asked them to bring him the book of the Chronicles, which was the book of his kingdom. And the record of his reign just happened to be open to this one time years ago when Mordecai had found out that somebody was trying to hurt him. And the king said, hey, what did we ever do for Mordecai? Did we ever do anything? And they said, no, we've never done anything for them. And so he decided they should do something for him. And so just in the morning, the king asked Haman, hey, Haman, what do you think somebody should do? The king wants to honor you. Well, guess what Haman thought? He thought, they're going to honor me. I'm going to do this up real big. He said, you know what I think you should do? I think you should give him a royal robe like Julius. I think you should put him on a big, nice horse and put him with this royal armor, and it should be, and you should go all the way through the city, and everybody should, and they should say, hey, this is what happens for somebody who works on the king's behalf. Imagine what happens when Haman finds out that this was not for him, but this was for Mordecai. Go get the robes and the horse and do just like you said, but let's do it for Mordecai, the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Well, Haman, he did what the king asked because he had to, but he was really upset. This is what's done to the man who delights the king. Haman, he had to go to the banquet with the king and the queen, and Esther finally, remember Esther? Esther finally gets up and says, I'm ready to ask my request. She said, I am a Jew. And she begged the king to spare her people. And then a woman named Harbona, one of the king's attendants, told the king of the gallows that Haman had built. They came in and said, hey, guess what? This gallows built. And the king was furious because he realized that Haman had done all these terrible things. And so he ordered that he be hung on the gallows that he had built. Haman's pride and cruelty led to his own destruction and the brave young Esther that saved people. And we cheer. Cheer! You all were just lovely in helping us tell the story. Did you hear? Did you catch the story? You wanted to? Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I didn't want anybody to get hung on Mother's Day, so we did. We kind of avoided that. So if you will take your costume, set them right by the chair, and you go find a place to sit down. And all of your parents and everybody here will give you a lovely round of applause because you were amazing. Go ahead. No, that's one of our favorite props, Julia. Go ahead. Hey, my hair looks okay now, right? Because the wig, it's good. Chris, I don't know if you followed all that. Purim is this, it's this wonderful, beautiful festival, and there's celebration, and it's all rooted from the fact that God used Esther to save the people. And so there's reason to celebrate. And there's such a great parallel to the Christian tradition of knowing that we're saved, knowing that we can go to funerals and be happy because we know this isn't the end. Of course we can celebrate and be excited. So what do we do with this story? It's odd, isn't it? Especially when you wear a mullet to read the story. It's kind of an odd story. And there's a couple different little bullets about the story that are compelling. People often point out the irony of the story. It's probably the most ironic story in the Bible. There's only two Old Testament books that don't contain the name of God anywhere in them. The Song of Solomon and Esther. We can talk about the faith of Esther, but the Bible doesn't really talk about Esther's faith in God. It's her commitment to the people. She's committed to the people, and yet the fingerprints of God are everywhere in this story. It's the great irony of the Bible. Where is God? Well, God is everywhere. Well, God is nowhere. His name isn't anywhere in there. And when you study Hebrew and you learn the kind of sacred nature of the name of God, the actual literal name of God, that they wouldn't even speak it. The fact that it's not in there, of course, would have been noticed. Of course, it would have been significant. And yet, as you follow the story of Esther through the story, hopefully you caught most of it there as we yelled out Haman's name. Just a test to make sure they were not in the part anymore. You find out that God was everywhere. How did the king find Esther in the first place? Through some kind of providence of God. You have that incidence of Mordecai finding out the plot that would kind of gave him good graces in the king. And God's providential hand seemed to be in that. The king's laying in bed at night and he can't sleep. And so he asks for the Chronicles to be brought. And it just so happens to be open to the page that talks about Mordecai to remind him about the instance. And there's something that preaches in this story kind of on its own. There are times when God just doesn't seem to be around. We have all these questions about where is God? That's really the overarching banner question as we read through Esther. Where is God? How many of us have asked that same question? How many of us ask that question all the time as we face different challenges and struggles? Where is God in this? And in the moment when the book happened to be open to Mordecai's incident, don't realize that God's hand was in that. The moment when Esther rises to prominence, the other Jews, they didn't know that God's hand was in that, but it's often as we look back and we see how God has been with us all along. I don't know how great of a Mother's Day sermon Esther is. The fact that she's a woman, I don't know if that just says, oh, great, for all women and mothers. But I know that mothers are honored and cherished in our churches all the time. We don't need a Sunday to honor that. But if there is something about Esther that resonates with motherhood, it's her willingness and desire to do something on behalf of her faith. In the Bible, there's this tension that arises in the New Testament between Paul, who says that we're saved by grace through faith, Ephesians, and then James, who says faith without works is nothing. You've got to do something. And we probably find ourselves on either pole from time to time. Sometimes thinking that, what do I have to do? God has already saved me. Come and sing some songs and get that good feeling and go back and busy in my life. It's almost like we wear it as a card that we carry in our wallet. Yeah, I'm a heaven-carrying card, right? I'll cash that in at the end. And then at other times, we can find ourselves on the other end of the pole, feeling driven to do more. Look at the people who don't do more in their faith. And say, why don't you do more? Well, I think if there's something to be left for us to take this morning from the story of Esther, it's the fact that she goes and faces the king, a terrifying thing, and she didn't feel inadequate. She felt inadequate to do it. She felt unprepared to do it. All those things. And so the first thing she does, she says, I'm going to fast. I'm going to pray. For 3 days, I'm going to dedicate. Prepare to approach the king, knowing that if he sets him off. I mean, everybody knew what happened to Vashti. Everybody knew what would happen if you crossed the king. And so she's afraid to do it, and so she roots her life in prayer and fasting. And there's something about that that I think resonates with us, that should resonate with us. We do good things. We're motivated by our faith to do good things because we're rooted in our relationship with God. It's God who compels us to do those things. And so if we beg and beg and beg for volunteers at church or to do this or to do that, I don't think we're going about it the right way. It's about being transformed in our relationship with God that then compels us on. That Esther is left with this moment of, what can I do for God? And as we kind of wrap things up this morning, I want to leave you with kind of this twofold message this morning. First of all, asking that very real question of where is God is a tough one to ask. We have peaks and valleys in our journey with finding God. Sometimes it feels really close. Sometimes it feels far away. The book of Esther reminds us that that's okay. He's there and that he's not always going to feel close. This is in a moment of Israel's time where God was kind of far away. He wasn't talking to the prophets. He wasn't talking to the people that he had been talking to for generations. And so they were searching for him. And so if you're searching for him this morning, you're in good company. Search authentically. We search our faith, driven to our knees to pray. That would be the other message I would leave with you this morning. That we search for all kinds of answers, all kinds of calamities, whether it's in our lives, whether it's in our churches, whatever it is, where we're always trying to fix things. And I think it's interesting that seldom do we begin by asking, how is your prayer life? How much time have you spent with the Lord lately? What is God working on you right now? What is he challenging you to do? What is he motivating you to do? You don't need sign-up geniuses and pleas from the pulpit to do. You need to find the internal reconciling and wrestling. What is God telling you to do? What does he want you to do? In our Bible study on this past Tuesday, which, by the way, we're not going to have tomorrow because we're gone, I read the end of the book of 1 Thessalonians this week. And it, you know, I thought about whether I would share this or not because it doesn't necessarily fit perfectly into this conversation. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, it does. It does fit. Because at the end of the book of Thessalonians, Paul is kind of just left to just unload a litany of things on the people. And not in a bad way, but just a, hey, here are the things you do as a church. Brothers and sisters, beginning in verse 12 of chapter 5. Honor those who are your leaders in the Lord's work. They work hard among you and give you spiritual guidance. Show them great respect and wholehearted love because of their work, and live peacefully with each other. Brothers and sisters, we urge you to warn those who are lazy. Encourage those who are timid. Take tender care of those who are weak. Be patient with each other. See that no one pays back evil for evil, but always try to do good to each other and to all people. Always be joyful. Never stop praying. Be thankful in all circumstances. For this is God's will for you who belong to Christ Jesus. Don't stifle the Holy Spirit. Don't scoff at prophecies, but test everything that is said. Hold on to what is good. Stay away from every kind of evil. Those are pretty amazing guidelines for what it means to be the church. Esther and the Jews under her leadership celebrated that God had done so much, that God has done so much in our lives, as Christians. And as we wrap things up this morning, the challenge of all of us is, what is God motivating you to do right now on His behalf? Maybe not lead a nation from extermination like Esther, but surely He is doing something in your life right now to be transformative to the people of God and the people who are not yet. And there's no real way to answer that other than looking inside yourself and saying, what is God telling me to do? Esther is the great mobilizer of faith. She's the one that says, I'm going to work, get something done on behalf of my people. And she encourages us to do the same. Spend some time at the end of 1 Thessalonians. Have for a while. Just reflect on that. Let that sink in. How do I do those things? This morning we celebrate why we are able to be here and worship and what God has held for us to do. I would invite you to sing with us this last song. Go ahead and stand up and celebrate all that God is doing in our lives.